walking down to that, I feel like the bride, you know? Like, I'm coming in the church, and I got the white dress on, and everybody's standing and watching. And, like, I get to walk up here and bow and stuff, and Cindy's like, play it, you know? And, oh, it's so great. It actually feels really weird because I'm not the king. Man, so good, you guys. So good, so good. So we're getting into the Sermon on the Mount, and we're kind of making our way to the end of chapter 5, and I decided to share with you a quote from Martin Luther, because Luther, he really had a problem with the Sermon on the Mount, not because of the sermon itself, but because of the way other people talked about the sermon. He thought the church had gotten this wrong, and they got it wrong forever. And so he's got this great quote. He says, "First of all, there have fallen upon this chapter the vulgar hogs and donkeys." He uses a different word, but we live in like the Bible Belt, so I changed the word. These vulgar hogs and donkeys, and then the jurists and sophists, and the right hand of the Pope and his mamelukes. And if you want to know what mamelukes means, it's an Arabic word. It means militant slaves. So the Pope and his militant slaves, they have sucked this poison out of this beautiful rose. They have sucked all the beauty out of what Jesus is trying to do in the Sermon on the Mount. And what is Jesus trying to do? Well, the way he leads off each of these phrases is interesting. He says, "You have heard that it is said, but now I say to you." And it's funny because you might go into my library and you'll see all these different theology books. And there's all kinds of commentaries and all kinds of books, and there's stuff by Luther and Max Lucado and so on and so forth. Pretty soon there's going to be a book with my name on it. I wouldn't recommend reading it. It's no good. But all this stuff's going to be there on the shelf, and you're going to look at it, and I'm going to tell you, no matter the best of the best that's on this shelf, all of it is but commentary, except for the word of the Lord. So the Bible's at a different level, but all the rest of this is commentary, and a lot of it's really, really good commentary. It would make really, really good sermons. And way back in Jesus' time, they had a library like that. They called it the Talmud. That Talmud was all the different writings and sayings of all the different rabbis that had taught. And so it was very common for a rabbi to quote some of these different commentaries from the Talmud. "You have heard that it was said such and such and such, and now I add to that teaching this teaching." And so that's what Jesus is doing here. Jesus is building on the teachings of the different rabbis that have come along through the different synagogues, and now he is saying, with all of this, I now fulfill it in this way. So Jesus takes these different teachings here about anger and lust and divorce and oaths. He takes kind of the substance of the Ten Commandments. He takes this moral law, and then Jesus wants to take it even further. Because the best thing about the law is that it can basically try to keep you reasonable. That's what laws do. See, we wouldn't need laws except that you and I like to speed. We don't really care about our neighbor. We have to lock our doors because everybody wants to take each other's stuff. And so what the law does is it comes in and it puts locks on doors and it puts stoplights in front of streets and it tries to keep us all reasonably moral, reasonably just. It tries to keep things fair. And Jesus comes along and he says, it's great to obey the law, but that only takes you so far. And what I want to do is pull you forward through the gospel and show you what a really free and loving life could look like. So he takes a command like do not murder. I don't know about some of you. I've actually never disobeyed the commandment. I have never murdered anybody. And then Jesus kind of adds a stipulation. Yeah, Jim, you haven't murdered anybody yet, but I'm actually telling you, don't even get angry with them. Okay, that's a little tougher. So don't murder them, and don't even murder them in your heart. Don't even get angry with them. In fact, more than that, Jim, I want you to take your enemy, and I want you to be friends with them. So murder becomes don't even be angry, becomes actually befriend your enemy. Jesus is taking us forward. This is not thou shalt not. This is now thou can and shall do good for your neighbor. He even talks about offerings, like when you come up to give your offering, whether it's you put it on the altar or put it in the offering plates or whatever, he says, before you put your offering in there, if you've got a problem with a neighbor or a friend or a brother or sister, what I want you to do is actually put your offering down. Don't give it to God yet. And go reconcile with somebody first, and then give your offering, which is terrible advice from a pastor, right? We really need your money in the offering plate. But Jesus seems to understand there's a whole system here that's going wrong, because if we don't get your heart right with each other, then all of our offerings do nothing. They do nothing. If we can't learn to love each other, then all this worship, it doesn't do any good. So reconcile, Jesus says, and then give your offering. He takes the command, do not commit adultery, like do not cheat. And I've never done that. Anybody else? No. And Jesus says, Jim, it's not enough to not just cheat. I don't even want you to lust. And not only that, but I want you to help build up your neighbor's marriage. Don't cheat, do not commit adultery becomes do not lust becomes I actually want you to restore people. I want you to take your neighbor out and take him to a salon and get a haircut. Buy him some cologne. Make him so attractive for his wife. It's not enough not just to cheat. I want you to actually build him up and restore relationships. I want you to be able to keep oaths. I want to be able to take this whole relationship and family thing to a whole nother level. He even continues and says, you know what? If there's things that get in the way, like if your eyes are causing you to lust, gouge them out. If your hand's causing you to lust, cut it off. And we might look at that and say, that's hyperbole. That's exaggeration. And it is, but it's also not, right? Because what does Jesus finish this statement with? It's better to do that than to be thrown into eternal damnation. And he's right. He's right. Now, I don't want anybody going out and, you know, gouging out eyes and stuff like that, even though it'd be really, really cool. But recognize what Jesus is doing. He's pulling you forward. He's pulling you forward to look at life, to look at people, not as objects. We got to get to a point where we see everybody else as our brother and sister, as our son and daughter, that we see ourselves in this family that God is creating. Eugene Peterson, he's a famous writer. He actually translated the Bible, and he called his Bible The Message. And The Message is kind of a nice reading of the scriptures. And he talks about one particular command that Jesus gives here, eye for eye. And he said when he was growing up, I mean, he had heard everything that his mom, you know, taught him about the Bible, and they were a very Bible-believing household. She wanted to make sure that Peterson obeyed the Bible literally. So when it came time for Jesus to say, hey, turn the other cheek, he's like, I'm going to do that. And I tried to do that everywhere I could. I mean, people would bully me in school, and I would kind of let it happen. I'd turn the other cheek. I wasn't about to fight back. But he said there was one bully that got in his face just too many times. His name was Garrison Johns. He actually writes his name in the book. And I'm kind of wondering if Garrison Johns is just sitting out there saying, I'm not a bully anymore, I swear. And the Garrison Johns bully incident with Eugene got to such a point that it started as verbal abuse. But then it became kind of gang abuse, where lots of different students were making fun of him, and even to the point where it was physical. He was getting beat up every day at school. This is not just taking your milk money. This kid was beating him up. And finally, one day, it's like all these Bible verses, turn the other cheek, love your enemy. Eugene said, I just forgot them. And I finally just turned around and I clocked them. And I was as amazed as anybody else. Garrison Johns fell to the ground. And the crowd around me just started applauding and applauding. And so I got on top of him and I pinned down his arms with my legs and started hitting him in the nose, and blood started splurting. It was like blood sport. It was so great. So he's beating this guy up, and everybody around him is cheering and cheering. And he finally tried to get him to say uncle. I don't know why we say uncle. I think the word would be mercy for me, but we say uncle for some reason. And he tells him, Garrison Johns, say uncle. And Garrison Johns shaking his head, I won't, I won't. He punches him again. He goes, say uncle, and he won't do it. And finally, the Bible teaching came back into his heart and his head. And he decided, if he's not going to say uncle, then how about say this? I say I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And then Garrison Johns did. And Eugene tells us, this was my first convert way, way before I became a pastor. the thing to know about eye for eye is before the law of Moses came along, it was not uncommon for revenge, retaliation, to escalate, which is always the way it is, right? It's always the way it is. Revenge always escalates. You come and you let your dog out and your dog poops in my yard. And so I go over to your house and I kick your dog. And you come back and you kill my cat, right? And then I go to your house and I poop in your yard and then I blow up your car. Or it's like Hatfields and McCoys. This ball is just rolling downhill. And it just picks up speed and speed and speed. And suddenly, generations later, we're like, we forget what we even disliked about each other. How does this happen with us? And so Moses comes along and he says, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, your revenge, your retaliation cannot escalate. Now, we would rather you forgive, but this is the limit. And that's what the law does. See, the law builds a big fence around you so you can only do so much damage. But it cannot free you to actually love. And so eye for eye, tooth for tooth, in many ways, is very moral. How is this law, for example, useful in our society? But also, how is it not useful? It's an important thing to contemplate. How is it useful? How is it not useful? I think Jesus is teaching us something very, very profound here. And he's not saying you can never defend yourself. He's not saying you can't defend your family or your country or anything like that, because trust me, there's bad guys out there, and I don't want you to always turn the other cheek. I don't want women to turn the other cheek. Kids, I don't want you to turn the other cheek. I want you to go to your parents, and I want you to let them know when bad things are happening to you. That's not what this is talking about. Not all the time. But there does come a time where we can forgive people's sins. That's where Jesus is going. And so I want you guys to be safe, and I want you to be protected, but I also want you to know that we don't have to go through the revenge cycle. And so what Jesus is also saying is, look, it's one thing to defend yourself, but what if there was a chance to save the bad guy? Because you can give him a black eye, and you can defend yourself, but it won't change his heart, will it? Maybe there's a way to change his heart. And if there's a chance for that, we got to take the risk. We have to love our enemy. We have to love our neighbor if we ever hope that somehow they can change. And that's why we use the phrase, true love hurts. It hurts to sacrifice yourself. It hurts to take a risk. But see, that's the thing. True love hurts hatred. True love hurts anger. True love hurts revenge. True love hurts death and loneliness. It's Jesus on the cross telling the Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. True love hurts me, but I know it can change them. So Father, let's forgive them. Why is he forgiving the soldiers? Because he doesn't want the devil to have them. He wants to change their hearts too. He wants a tear to come to their eye when he looks up and they wonder, why is this guy praying for me on the cross? I'm here torturing him. Why would he pray for me? Why would he care for me? What does that do to my heart? And during World War II, a lot of people don't know this, but Gandhi actually wrote two letters to Adolf Hitler. Two letters, and the letters were called to my dear friend Adolf Hitler. Can you imagine such a thing? He wrote two letters to Adolf Hitler, and in the first one, this is right before World War II really started, he wrote to him and he warned him about what it's like to go through the life of revenge and retaliation. That when you try to bring your idea of justice through force, through war, through bloodshed, it always ends up somewhere worse. And so he calls him out as his dear friend and gives him all this evidence that somehow offering peace to your neighbor, when you're dealing with even things as complicated as border wars, somehow it is always going to come with a better end. And that if you do bloodshed, it never ends anywhere good. But at the end of the letter, Gandhi finishes with words that are kind of like this. But no matter what your decision, know that I will always be here for you, your dear friend. And he signed his name. Can you imagine such a letter? He wrote him a second letter later on, but that letter was a little bit more forceful, where he told him, don't you see the evidence of everything you're doing and how destructive this is? and greater powers will come to power and use the same methods you're using. I think he was talking about our country. And they will use these same methods of war against you, and you're going to destroy your whole society. But he finishes the same way again, your dear friend, and he signs his name. Maybe this is what Jesus had in mind. The sad thing is these two letters never got delivered to Hitler. They were intercepted by British spies. So we never know if this actually could have convinced him in some way. They were intercepted by British spies and never got delivered. You can go see them in museums today. You can see them online if you ever want to take a look. But it's an amazing letter. So when Jesus talks about this, here's another question for you. How does responding to wrongdoing with love exceed the power of retaliation? How does responding with love have more potential for good than retaliation? Jesus has this famous phrase in our reading for today. He says, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Well, what does this mean? Well, back in the first century, the Roman government had taken control and they had Roman soldiers in different areas. And there around Jerusalem, you had Roman soldiers that would come along. And as a service to your government, Rome, a Roman soldier could come to you and say, would you help carry my pack for 1 mile? This is a way of supporting your troops. This is a way of offering your assistance so that they would not be overburdened in all their marching. And so they could always ask you to carry their pack for 1 mile. And again, so you're supporting the troops. But from the Jewish point of view, the Romans were invading them. These soldiers were inconveniencing them. And so many of the Jews would refuse to do the packs. In fact, they would attack them when they were marching. And so it led to a lot of animosity between the Jewish people and against the Roman soldiers. Now, Jesus comes along and he says, not only carry the pack for 1 mile, which is your governmental duty, I want you to take it beyond that. See, the first mile was the law. The second mile, I want you to do it for that man as a gift. Now, what does that do? Well, it does a number of things. You are saying to your enemy, I'll do one thing because of the law, but I will do the second as a friend. And I think it changes the soldier. Suddenly, you have people that before were just enemies, but now suddenly it seems like, are they willing to be my friend? Jesus wants to change the heart of that soldier, and he wants to use his people to do this. Jesus' crucifixion, it's the ultimate sign of go the extra mile. It's the ultimate sign when he gives his forgiveness there. And so maybe this last question is for you. Who in your life do you need to go an extra mile with? Who in your life, like, there's sort of a responsibility you have, and so you kind of do the right thing, but maybe Jesus is saying to you, but you could go an extra mile. Who is an enemy that if somehow you were able to treat them as a friend, as a brother, as a sister, maybe God could use that for some good to help change their heart? That is always the challenge of the gospel, because the extra mile Christian life loves enemies and turns them into friends. I guarantee you, the most difficult, the most complex, the most deep matter of all theology, the part you will never master is this one. Love your enemy. If you would spend your whole life exploring and practicing love thy enemy, we will change the world. That is Jesus' message. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.